Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and here's what we're talking about on today's episode. One vote into the Republican presidential primary, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has dropped out of the race. Now he's backing Donald Trump.
You don't think that one or two of these people want to be the VP?
They want to be a cabinet member.
They
don't want to be ostracized by the
right.
Apple is facing mounting regulatory and legal pressures. CNBC's Steve Kovac lays out the company's challenges ahead.
It's interesting to see Microsoft kind of back at the top again and leading this innovation wave, whereas Apple is just making iPhones.
And AI is changing the game for industries and for workers. AI investor, entrepreneur, and Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale joins us.
I think you actually see by the mid to late 2020s, economic numbers showing up where productivity's gone up.
Plus, it was a big weekend for Detroit. The NFL playoffs are in full swing. WashU's sports director Patrick Risch says the Lions win means a big deal for bookies.
Right now, the bookmakers are worried because Detroit keeps winning and everybody that's a casual fan is betting the Lions.
It's Monday, January 22nd, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square, and we were just saying nothing can make you miss Times Square like being really far away and really cold. We are glad to be back. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin, and here we are, fellas.
Is it
the canyons?
It's not quite like
the mountains of New York.
It's not quite like
different vistas.
Not quite like hitting your head against a wall because it feels so good when you stop. We like Davos. We like Davos. It's a grind.
We like coming home.
That 6 hours is, you know.
6 hour difference.
You're talking
about.
You don't know where you don't know whether you're coming or going half the time.
People don't talk enough about that, by the way, about why Davos. I think for a lot of people who go there, they're like, it's like an out-of-body experience for a couple of days because they're all jet-lagged.
In a haze.
They're all running around like crazy.
But you're definitely in kind of a haze. And you're going to bed and going, you know, I'm going, what time is it? Bed? It's 5 p.m. home, and I'm going back home, and I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
And then you get back, and I almost couldn't sleep when I got back.
I couldn't sleep when I got back.
In the morning, which was good because I know what was coming on Monday.
Right. No fun for any of us. Anyway, Andrew?
Meantime, I'll bring you an update on the 2024 presidential race because a big thing changed over the weekend. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis dropping out yesterday and endorsing frontrunner Donald Trump. The announcement coming just 2 days before the New Hampshire primary. In a social media post, DeSantis said he can't ask his supporters to volunteer their time and resources if he doesn't have a clear path to victory. He also took a shot at the remaining challenger to Trump.
We can't go back to the old Republican guard of yesteryear, a repackaged form of warmed-over corporatism that Nikki Haley represents. The days of putting Americans last, of kowtowing to large corporations, of caving to woke ideology are over.
Meantime, Bloomberg reporting that the Wall Street billionaire Stanley Druckenmiller and billionaires Henry Kravis, Ken Langone, Cliff Asness are co-hosting a fundraiser for Haley. That's going to happen on January 30th in New York City. So we'll see whether she can build up enough of a war chest to build enough momentum to take on Trump.
It's funny. They asked former President Trump, what about the Ron DeSanctimonious nickname? He goes, that's been retired. That's gone. And it just shows you how this is all one big game.
SNL went to Ronda Stupid, if you saw that on Saturday night.
I didn't think the DeSanctimonious was that good, but like, we tried early on to get him on again and again and again. Will you talk about again and again? Really, Ron? How'd that work? You don't want to. You want to be president, but you don't want to talk to people and talk to the public.
It's a bizarre situation.
But with the way, you know, now suddenly endorsing Donald Trump. Well, you were on The Simpsons, remember?
Yep.
So there was a Simpsons episode where Ann Coulter and Al Sharpton were screaming at each other on this talk show. And the minute the cameras go off, they go, Al Sharpton goes, hey, Ann, where are we going to dinner tonight? They go, what? You really got me? High five each other, and they head out of the studio together, heading to some place for cocktail. That's the way it seems like this all, it all worked.
You don't think that one or two of these people want to be the VP?
Well, they want to be a cabinet member.
Or
they don't want to be ostracized by the
Right. That's all this is. That's all this is.
But when you go from just almost pure vitriol and vitriol and hatred to
but that's how sick it is.
But that's part of the reason that's
why it's a trust. The Republicans are so cynical.
They
right.
don't trust
and they should be.
They don't
they
trust.
They should and they should.
Beyond, right.
And this goes to the Alex Karp thing. People say stuff that they don't believe.
Right.
And everybody
right.
knows it.
I have. Do you know how many times on this show in the past 5 years I've said virtue signaling?
Yes, but I believe it.
You what? You believe there is virtue signaling?
No, I believe what I'm saying. That's the difference.
Well, you're different than everybody else, then. I do. And I do say things that I believe, and then I get in trouble. The Journal is not going to get the VP position or a cabinet.
This is what did they say this time?
This is the last paragraph of the op-ed page on the 2024 Republican choice. If Republicans do, in fact, nominate Mr. Trump again, it's democracy, the worst system except for all the others. But our unhappy guess is that sooner or later, the choice of nominating Mr. Trump will end in tears for his voters. So they are not going to—they're not going to jump on the bandwagon. We'll see. Between now and November, doesn't sound like they will. And Druckenmiller and who else? Langone,
Kravis. Well, I don't think they're jumping on the bandwagon.
Question is, what happens if she doesn't perform well in New Hampshire? And when she finally, you've heard what Trump has said about her recently. So if she finally drops out and endorses Trump, are they going to be hugging?
Well,
and,
that can't, yes, you're right, at some point. I mean, she's going after the age, his age.
Well, after some confusion right.
yeah.
over the weekend.
Yeah,
yeah,
right? yeah.
Where he was
yeah.
confusing
oh,
her with
I'm
Nancy
not,
Pelosi.
But
no, I know
I
you're not.
Well,
you
now,
never, you
no
never would, but that was it was bad enough. When he congratulated the state of Kansas when the Chiefs won. That was one thing. But now he's confusing Nancy Pelosi
with Nikki Haley.
Look, almost as if, it's just a symbol of someone I'm really, really mad about. And I got the same mad feeling. Yeah, I'm same mad feeling about this woman and that woman. And they're just all interchangeable.
Got brown hair. ExxonMobil is suing two sustainable investment firms. It's trying to block them from putting forward a shareholder proposal that would commit the energy giant to further curbing its greenhouse gas emissions and target its customers' emissions as well. Exxon says that the two investors, Arjuna Capital and Follow This, became shareholders only to advance proposals that would diminish its existing business or put it out of business entirely. In fact, they call this company, they call these activists masquerading as investors. If you look at how they buy their shares, they ask people to donate money so that they can buy these shares and then they move along with them. Exxon's point is not that they should never get a chance to air these things, but they have brought these proposals again and again and have lost overwhelmingly. In some cases, 80-85% of the shareholders voted against them. In some cases, 72% voted against these issues. They say that it takes a lot of time and energy from the company. And by the way, this is, I don't know if you remember last year at Davos when we were talking to CEOs and they were worried about the new, was this last year or the year before, when they were worried about the new proposal from the SEC that would make it much easier for minority investors right. to get proxy, get their proposals on the proxy. It takes up a lot of time and energy from these companies. And I don't think they're saying you can't ever do this, but corporate gadflies have risen to all kinds of new prominence, including activists who really don't want to see the company succeed. And I think that's their point here.
And Exxon produce, I mean, they may transition down the road, but they do. They're in the business of producing fossil fuels. I mean, I wouldn't want ESG activists lobbying the big three to make only EVs, because we know how that would go.
Yeah, and their concern is it's not healthy for shareholders at large. It's not healthy for the employees at large.
What happens if it's really cold? Did you read that? Parking lots of stalled
EVs. Battery cars, yep.
Yeah, there's
what temperature and how does it happen to every single car, or is it just a fluke, or do you know? If it's 10 degrees.
I don't know.
And you're trying to charge.
I don't know.
Can you charge?
Look, there are differences. I've seen a lot of activity and things showing you how to better charge it. You need to make sure that you have like the right charging. It's got to be like a 120 instead of a 220 or something in terms of the voltage that you're putting out on it. That helps.
Well, anecdotally, there's a guy who said, I was here yesterday for 3 hours. I had to get a ride home. Now I'm back today trying to get it moved.
That's true. The charge doesn't hold as
long. My head would be
exploding.
Wouldn't it, if that happened? Apple under attack on several fronts, regulatory, legal, and antitrust. And Steve Kovac joins us more. It's an important stock, Steve.
We're only 3 weeks into the year, and these just regulatory and legal pile-ons just keep happening for Apple. And they're putting some restrictions on Apple's ecosystem. But more telling than that is how Apple responds to all these regulations and legal cases and tries to water them down. Let me give you a couple examples that have been happening over the last several days. You had the Supreme Court, which declined to hear the Epic Games lawsuit. Now, Apple won that case mostly, except for one count, and it's now legally required to let apps offer discounts by sending users to a separate website in order to make their payments. Now, that would normally get a 30% fee to Apple, but Apple found a way around it, and it's still going to charge 27%, just a 3% discount. And some other things going on recently, a concession from Apple, actually. Apple offered in the EU to let third parties have access to its wallet app. That means PayPal and other payment services can get in there as well. And another concession just last week, they're going to sell the Apple Watch here in the United States without that blood oxygen sensor in order to comply with the import ban over that patent dispute we've been talking about for the last several weeks. But we're still waiting to see how Apple responds to the EU's Digital Markets Act, which is going to go into effect later this year and goes directly after Apple's lucrative App Store and other core services. So that's going to be the big one to see if they can skirt around it the same way they've been kind of able to skirt around these other smaller cases that have been hitting them in recent days. It's a lot piling on here.
It's in general, the S&P's at a new high, obviously.
Yeah.
So it's got to go along. So I thought my machine might be broken. You know what Apple's market cap is right now?
2.761. Okay, so it's getting close to...
Do you know what Microsoft is this morning?
What? 3?
No. 2.961.
They're literally the same.
They're literally... I wouldn't say... This is a point where you can't say exactly the same because one is 2 point... Actually, maybe I can't see. 2.963. It may have... But it's changing.
Right.
It's changing right now.
Here's a question for you.
But it is... They're right at 2... They're right... Next, 2.96.
You can weigh in on this, but I'm asking Joe because I feel like Joe has his finger on
the pulse of everything.
He really does.
The market.
Yeah. He already pre-ordered a Vision Pro.
If you were
the what?
He doesn't even know what it is. If you could buy either Apple or Microsoft.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you now that you're not allowed to sell the stock.
Yes.
For 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 20 years.
Yeah.
Which one are you buying?
Microsoft.
Buying Microsoft.
I think most people think that way.
Yeah, that's
the
bad.
AI thing.
So it should be Apple then.
But the interesting thing with all this regulatory stuff, Apple's about to get hit where Microsoft was over 20 years ago, and they're going to have to go through this slog of regulatory stuff that Microsoft has mostly evaded. There's some stuff around OpenAI that they're dealing with. So it's interesting to see Microsoft kind of back at the top again and leading this innovation wave, whereas Apple is just making
iPhones. But do you think there's, Jim Breyer saying that there's $1 trillion of value in Microsoft that's just AI.
Just
that's
AI.
Just waiting to be unlocked.
No, it's the,
I don't know if it's, I don't even know. It has to be unlocked to actually get to that value is his point. Whereas actually, I think there's almost no AI valuation built into Apple
definitely not.
At all.
Definitely
but
not.
What has been the rap on Apple for... What kind of company? It's a gadget maker.
It's a consumer.
It's a gadget maker. In Microsoft, you don't think of it that way. You think of it as much more,
It's the layer. They're building this
software. But Apple's
layer
so much more than a gadget maker. And the services and the ecosystem and everything. Of course, Microsoft has a pretty good ecosystem. Yeah, has a pretty good ecosystem.
They do. And it's going to get more dynamic with the AI tools that they're actually selling. And they're selling it to consumers now. They've really opened it up. They're the only ones doing it.
Trying to think, if I can't sell it for 20 years, I'm thinking about what the hell I'm going to buy with it, 20 diapers or something. I mean, there's not going to be a lot I'm probably doing. But,
well, where will you be in 20 years?
I will be right here.
We're still here? Yeah.
Right here, just for Andrew, just to keep him honest. Thank you.
Above ground.
He's never retiring, Andrew, that's what he's saying.
No, slab, baby. On a slab.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, the rising importance of chips in the AI craze.
The infrastructure of chips is critical to make this work. If you can make chips commoditized, that means the rest of us are going to be all very well off.
We'll chat with Palantir co-founder and tech entrepreneur Joe Lonsdale about the intersection of productivity, wealth creation, and technology. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're back in New York and we're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin along with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan. AI taking center stage last week at the World Economic Forum in Davos alongside discussions of global conflicts, including the Russia-Ukraine war and the Israel-Hamas war. Join us right now to discuss the intersection of geopolitics and technology. Joe Lonsdale is here, founding partner of 8VC, which is backed defense tech companies like Anduril and Epirus. He's also co-founder, of course, of Palantir and co-founder of a self-described free speech university in Austin, which I want to talk to you about. But I want to ask you, I want to start with just an AI question. Mm-hmm. Everybody was going, you know, AI crazy in Davos. And the thing that I can't figure out is whether AI is going to be so pervasive that it becomes sort of a commoditized feature of basically every piece of software that everybody has, or whether it's actually going to be a going to ultimately create new standalone products that create new value. Meaning, you look at some of these, if it's just going to be a feature of everything, then the question is how much more value is it creating in these in the companies that either already exist or the new companies. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, AI, Andrew, is going to be something that impacts productivity. That's what really matters here, right? At the end of the day, what are we all doing with these markets, with these businesses? You want to create more with less. You want to create more prosperity for society. When you have something like electricity, I mean, it takes decades to work its way through everything, right? Electricity, I think 30 years in, you finally had factories designed to use electricity. But even in the first decade, it did a lot of other things.
Right.
AI right now, it's going after a lot of areas. We're seeing already how it could raise the margins, how it could address things. There's lots of service areas of the economy. I'll give you one example. Healthcare billing is a $280 billion revenue area. And we're already seeing how AI is probably going to be able to double the margins in that area, which basically means you pull $100 billion of spend out of the economy. That's new wealth it creates through productivity. There's probably going to be trillions of dollars of that the next 5 years.
You think in the next 5 years that happens?
I think you actually see by the mid to late 2020s, like economic numbers showing up where productivity has gone up.
Do you think, though, you know, I was thinking Con Ed, which is electricity in New York, it's not a great high flyer of a stock because at some point it does become commoditized. So is there like a period right now which is like a renaissance and then it gets commoditized? The other thing that I worry about or think about is whether we're in 1996 or 1999, where there's just going to be too much of an almost overinvestment in this area. And there's going to be a lot of collateral damage when it's over.
I mean, the way markets work with new possibilities is there always is overinvestment. There's a few big platforms that emerge that are going to be extraordinarily valuable. The same way in the late 90s, you had things like Amazon born, you have Google born. Obviously, those would have been really good bets. You have a lot of other things that there's too much hype. But then basically, you have these infrastructure for AI that makes a lot of money because two or three or five things emerge as winners there.
Right.
And then the whole economy benefits. If productivity goes up as much as it looks like it's going to do, that makes money for every one of us. And that's a good thing for the whole society.
Do you think there's more value in the software piece or the hardware piece? One of the things that I think has been fascinating to hear, people were talking about it actually in Davos, is Sam Altman, who was there from OpenAI, clearly has been looking around to try to raise money to actually start manufacturing chips. In the old world, chips were never considered a valuable thing to do. And by the way, maybe in 10 years from now, there'll be an overabundance of chips and nobody will care about chips anymore. But for the next 5 or 10 years, it seems like people won't be able to get enough of them.
The infrastructure of chips is critical to make this work. If you can make chips commoditize, that means the rest of us are going to be all very well off because you're going to be applying it to the whole economy. I mean, the most money is going to be made, frankly, for the S&P 500, for the big companies that are more productive overall. That's where the real money gets made if this works. But we need the chips to do that. I mean, Sam's thinking, how can I apply this technology? How do we scale it? There's a scarcity of chips. So it's really smart to do.
In the defense world, how do you think it fundamentally changes things? I mean, we were talking to your co-founder, Alex Karp, about sort of how AI is going to impact his business. He's leveraging ChatGPT and some of these other large language models as well. So the question is, do you have to create your own model? Is it really just about taking somebody else's model and applying it to what you're doing?
Well, it was really cool. I guess OpenAI opened up to defense now. But listen, in the defense world, software is becoming more important. AI makes software determinative in defense. We already have all these new companies needed in defense because the old big primes, the big legacy defense contractors, they're really good at hardware. They're pretty bad at software. Thanks to AI, you now desperately need all the new companies in defense because there's a bigger gap there.
What does that mean, determinant? Like determine it means who you're going to go after, or you mean determining what lines you kind of follow?
It means determining like what technologies are dominant in warfare, right? So if you have AI being as good as it is now, suddenly it really, really matters to have the best software. If you're going to be doing, like, you want to get a certain amount of money for a certain amount of outcome, right? So if you're going to be building 1,000 small autonomous drones for some kind of battle scenario, if you have AI, you desperately are going to need the best software companies involved in that. Otherwise, you're going to lose that battle. You're going to not be deploying it correctly.
Hey, Joe, I know that, I think you think Bitcoin is real, right? My question now is that, you know, it's become mainstream to the point of ETFs. I think it's be harder to go higher quickly now. Unlike it was supposed to be that everyone can get in now and that all the ETF companies are going to need to buy Bitcoin to put it in the ETFs. To me, it's like if you bought it at $800 or $8,000, you were smart. You went through a lot of trouble to buy it. Now everyone can buy it. I think it's going to be here for a while.
There's not going to be a whole new financial story driving it from the side of buyers necessarily, although there's one type of buyer that could be very important here. AI agents are going to start doing a lot of things in our economy. And for AI agents to coordinate with incentive systems, they're probably going to use crypto. And so if this AI story works out in certain consumer areas, especially.
And then tokenizes everything.
To AI, Do you know, Kathy, would 500,000, a million? And that's year.
But they're not going to be trading Bitcoin. They might be using Ethereum. They might be using Solana. They might be using other things that they can tokenize.
Those are the three they might use, and they're probably all correlated at the end of the day. And you know, I mean, the 500,000 story for me, Joe, is more about the macro question: are we going to be in a massive deficit in 25 and 26 and spending money willy-nilly, irresponsibly? If so, what assets safe? I mean, if you have inflation come up again, you have bonds sell off again with crazy government spending, that's a story I'm hearing from a lot of my friends who know macro better than me. You could see crypto do very well.
Yeah, we're not going from 100% debt to GDP back down to 30 just by waving a magic wand, are we? How are we going to do that?
Well,
I mean,
you got to fire a lot of people. That's a whole other question.
I know we're running out of time, but I want to talk about this new university that you're starting. You have 100 new students that are going to start in the fall. It really is about free speech and free thinking. I ran into Neil Ferguson in Davos. He's one of your co-founders. You're doing it with Barry Weiss. Of these 100 students, what is their worldview for the most part?
I mean, we want to have one of our top universities actually bring people together who want to be part of the solution, who want to be thinking about a future that's more optimistic. I think our culture has gotten way too negative. Our culture has gotten way too censored. You have a lot of people. It's very easy to criticize the man in the arena. Let's all try to be the man in the arena. And you know, we're doing scholarships for the first 100. They're all getting to go for free. There's going to be 10 of them that get even paid $100,000 extra scholarships we're looking for the best and brightest. We want to have America's elite actually be part of something that's functional.
Joe, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Next on Squawk Pod, big bets on the NFL playoff games. We'll talk about the high risk, high reward of sports betting and why the bookies might be worried. Sports business expert Patrick Risch from WashU in St. Louis.
Right now, based on the numbers, you've got 10 times more dollars bet on the Lions to win the Super Bowl. So there is a huge, huge exposure for the books.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs.
That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC Live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Now for a look at this weekend's NFL playoff games and the betting landscape, let's bring in Patrick Reese, director of the sports business program at Washington U in St. Louis. He is also the CEO of Sports Impacts and a market scale sports business contributor. Patrick, it's good to see you. I think the most interesting thing, but the Super Bowl is X amount of betting dollars. That's coming up. And then the playoffs are, in your, there's a rule of thumb, four times the amount. And what does that come out to? $64 billion?
Yeah, if you base it on last year's numbers, Joe, talking to some of my sources in the industry, yeah, last year's Super Bowl, the betting was $16 billion. So the betting on the rest of the NFL playoffs is 4X. So I think this year we're going to see, obviously, a larger volume of betting because you have now more states that have legalized betting.
What's the growth? That's what I was going to ask you. It's probably, can you just...
You know, easily. I would say this. I base everything on the Super Bowl. So if last year's Super Bowl was $16 billion, I think this year's Super Bowl is going to be somewhere between $20 to $25 billion gambled. So that means roughly this year we're talking about $80 billion on all the other playoff games combined. This past weekend, those four games estimate around $20 billion spent on wagering for those games. And let me tell you, Joe, right now the bookmakers are worried because Detroit keeps winning and everybody that's a casual fan is betting the Lions.
I didn't bet on them. And you know what I do, Patrick? I do a lot of money line bets, which aren't even money. There, you get, you know, a lot of money, a lot of, with point spreads, you don't even double your money. You know, so you got to put a parlay on, like an under or an over, pick someone to score. It's harder. So, you know, on any given Sunday, as I used to say, if it's a 2.5-point spread, just take the money line and at least get maybe one plus 180 or something like that. So I had Tampa Bay, but it could have gone. Tampa Bay did not really, that wasn't going to happen. But the other two games, it could have been either or. Buffalo could have won yesterday, right?
Yeah, another 40, heartbreaker. Another heartbreaker.
49ers could have lost, too. 49ers could have lost.
Yeah, another heartbreaker for Buffalo fans when a kicker misses a kick. But going back to the Lions, you know, Joe, right now, based on the numbers, you've got 10 times more dollars bet on the Lions right now, the four teams left, 10 times the amount bet on them to win the Super Bowl. So there is a huge, huge exposure for the books. But part of this is it's funny how the casual sports fan is going to bet with their hearts rather than their heads. And a lot of casual sports fans love this Dan Campbell, Jared Goff redemption story. And that's why a lot of money is going down on the Lions.
Well, watch his halftime interview. And he is a great coach. I mean, he was not, there wasn't the slightest bit of, he just said, look, do your job. And we're having a lot of fun. And this is not going to be a problem for us. It's all gravy for them. And Goff is like, he's never played this well, what he's playing in the last. Okay, so what about streaming? The rights got to be worth more. And I had to laugh when I read something about how the Peacock stream game was the lowest, had the lowest numbers of the game. It was streaming. To do 23 million in streaming is the highest streaming numbers of anything ever, wasn't it?
It was. And look, streaming is certainly not going anywhere because all of these leagues know that they covet the younger fan. And this is where younger fans are going. Joe, when I talk to my students later on this morning in class at Wash U, these kids, some of them have never had cable. Most of them are cord nevers. Their parents may be cord cutters. And this is where people are going. So you've got to reach people. You still have to have linear, because there are obviously plenty of people that still want to consume it that way, but you have to go where people are, where the consumer is. So we've seen soccer do this with Apple and their massive deal. We're now seeing Amazon try to throw a life raft to Diamond Sports Group in that particular bankruptcy ruling. Absolutely, you're going to see more of this in the future in the NFL and in most sports.
Yeah, the future looks really bright for the NFL. You combine the streaming revenue with, 25%, 30% increase in gambling revenue, those people that put money down, they're going to watch. So I don't think you can do a 25% increase in viewership, but certainly makes a lot more people want to watch. And Now people are betting intra-game on things happening too, Patrick, right?
Yeah, well, that speaks to the technology. Technology has infiltrated every aspect of life, every industry, including gambling. And when you have these in-game bets, this is something where people can bet on the fly. So when we watch these games next weekend, there are going to be lines not just before the game, but during the game. Every quarter, there's a point spread on who's going to score, who's going to win that quarter, who's going to win that half. And these are exotic bets that, again, increases engagement and boosts the business, both for the league, the teams, and obviously the gambling companies. One other financial nugget, Joe, for the games coming up this weekend.
Yep.
Secondary ticket prices. Right now, the lowest buy-in for the San Francisco game is $800. The lowest buy-in in Baltimore is $650. The highest price ticket right now in San Francisco, $12,000. In Baltimore, $8,000. So obviously the Bay Area, very affluent. Not surprising that those prices are higher than what we're seeing in Baltimore.
Thank you, Patrick.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for listening. In today's episode, you might have heard Joe, Becky, and Andrew refer back to their week in Davos. The highlights of their conversations all live on your podcast feed, including an interview with Palantir co-founder and CEO, Alex Karp.
People want to talk about rebuilding trust. The elite, no one trusts the elite. Yes, but how could you trust the elite if everything you're saying is a half-truth at best?
Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC starting at 6 a.m. Eastern. You can find the best of that TV broadcast right here on Squawk Pod. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.